Hey, all you cool cats and kittens. It is Lambda coming at you again with an awesome episode that was so much fun to make with some new friends, Ray and VJ. You might know them as the Death In Podcast. They have really cool music. We had so much fun talking with Will Acton, who you may know as Lilac Town. There are so many bad jokes. Streetlight Manifesto, we talk BJJ, there's some dancing that thankfully you don't get to see. We meet a pretty lady. And yeah, we talk about some closure script, some JavaScript, some closure. We talk about Will's library, Helix, and HX, the difference between them. We talk about how that fits into Reagent, and tons of other stuff in between. So tune in, folks, hold on, and get ready for an awesome time. We will keep doing this just because it was so gosh darn fun. Here we go.
La la la, lost in Lambda. La la la, lost in Lambda.
Welcome to Death In, episode number 74. Since we realized that we are falling out of, people's interest, and then we thought we were going to bring in much more hipper, cooler people on your podcast, so reignite the interest in Death In, because we are old ass people talking about shit, and then Ray keeps talking about some Victorian shit that nobody understands. And
fuck off.
I'm somewhere in between, immigrant dude talking about some shit that nobody understands. So we want to make sure that, you know, the Snap, I don't know if Snapchat is a thing these days, I'm not, TikTok thing, yes. The TikTok meme.
The gramophone is a thing.
For what it's worth, I am not a Snapchatter or a TikToker. I am a millennial. Those are Gen Z. I do really like memes, though. If you want to see my memes, you can check out my Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. Not, that's
vinyl
that's
records
too
back
you.
In. Vinyl records. Will probably listens to Streetlight Manifesto on vinyl, for all I know.
Anyway, so we decided. Yes, so we decided we're going to get somebody way more hip, way more cool than us. So this is good, the greatest crossover that you've been waiting for. Please welcome to the episode, Jordan.
Hey, I'm the trendy new dev on the block. I actually thought you were going to say Will when you were talking about.
Nah, look, he's the guest. He knows what he's getting into.
And I was going to be like, oh no, you're going to be so disappointed.
I know. So. I thought you were introducing Will, and I was like, oh, this is a good lead. Like, I was engaged too. Like,
You have to know that the guests are just an after effect, you know, just an afterthought as far as we're concerned. It's like gonna come one episode off the next, you know. It's like
I mean, of course first we need to introduce the co-host. Now we're gonna introduce the guest. So maybe you can introduce the guest and double down on the Gen Z pandering, you know?
Yeah, millennials, come on, you know, trend us up.
Well, okay. No. So I'm the trendy new dev on the block, but even trendier is Closure Script. So have somebody that is doing some really, I did not prepare a script. This is a lot.
Welcome to Death In, everyone.
Welcome to Death In, Will Acton, a.k.a. Lilac Town. Yeah.
Okay.
You haven't seen the memes. People should know
this. I clicked twice.
They should be following the memes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you all for having me on. This has been quite a journey so far, even in the last 10 minutes that I've been on. So I'm excited to see where the rest
of
the
hour is. You're already regretting.
Regret would be too strong, but, you know, getting up there.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
It's too early for regret, you know. I
mean, yeah, but it'll be complete regret if it is just Ray and, you know, me. But we have better guests and better hosts, so co-host. So we were talking about your T-shirt. So, yeah, welcome to the, I don't know, Streetlight Manifesto podcast. What is what is Streetlight Manifesto? Great.
You know, you go to one concert and you get one T-shirt, and suddenly, like, the entire internet is now knows you by that.
Who is Will? Oh, that Streetlight Manifesto fan guy.
Yeah, it's the Streetlight
guy,
dude,
the Scott guy. Great.
Yeah, the ska guy.
I won't even rate Twitter ska now, isn't like, it? You know, in my top three you know, music genres, but I do love Streetlight Manifesto.
What are your other two?
You know, actually, I played classical music for a long time as when I was growing up. And so, you know, when I'm like, it depends on like the time of day, but either I'm in like, okay, I've got to like settle down and get into a flow. So I'm going to do some like, you know, classical music, you know, some Bach, Vivaldi, or I'm like, okay, I gotta pump myself up. I gotta hype myself up. I'm on my third cup of coffee and my brain's not turning on. So that's when the Streetlight Manifesto comes in.
Any Lindsey Sterling? I thought you were going to be like, then I get in my flow and I do a crossover, like classical dubstep, Lindsey Sterling, here we go. Like, I thought that's where we were going with it.
I mean, I think maybe, our
maybe
audience
check that out like, after this.
Oh, you haven't heard Lindsey Sterling?
Which one?
You haven't heard Lindsey Sterling?
Not maybe like one or two songs, but her name doesn't like immediately ring a bell.
Well, She's a violinist that dances. She dances and it's dubstep.
This episode
sounds pretty awesome.
This episode should have been a video recording. I mean, people who are listening are missing out race monkey jumping and you reenacting violin dancing. This is pure gold.
It's true.
Can I check, Will? You know, when you went to see Streetlight Manifesto, did you get into the mosh pit?
No, I did not.
Come on.
Yeah.
What?
I know.
Were you trying to be COVID safe? Were you?
It was pre-COVID, luckily. So, but yeah, I just, you know, my body doesn't. I mean, there wasn't like much of a mosh pit there, anyways. But
what is it?
You know,
I'll be the guy. Like the guy.
What is a mosh pit? You mean?
Yeah.
Oh, it's like all the big, like the front of the audience, which are going mental and sort of packing, and jumping, and dancing. Okay. You know.
Yeah, so it definitely depends on the scene.
Name. Okay.
Like, you know, when I was a teenager, I went to a few like metal shows and, you know, they get really, you know, into their sort of, you know, moshing and, you know, beating each other up and throwing each other around. And I did that like once and I was like, okay, this hurts. Like, I don't know if I want to pay a bunch of money to go and get a black eye.
I like punk mosh pits because so I grew up, my stepdad was in a punk band. Right. And so I grew up like punk. And so, you know, I would be this like 10, 11, 12 year old little girl. My dad would take me to the shows and, you know, they were chill enough that, you know, when I wasn't in there, they would go a little rougher. It was fun, but then they would let me in and they would let like a 12 year old girl dance, you know, dance and skunk around in these awesome mosh pits. So that was,
Is it the place where they throw the singers onto the crowd? Is it that one? No,
that's crowd waving, isn't it? Crowd surfing.
Okay,
all right.
But yeah, I remember when I was a punk when punk was a thing. When your dad was a punk, I was a punk. And then, you know, yeah, the mosh pit was just basically just pushing everyone around, you know. And it was it was quite quite extreme, really. But if I'm not wrong, Will, you do some martial arts, don't you? So you're kind of built for it, really.
Punch other people and then move to the front.
Well, you know, the martial art that I chose is also specifically one that I do not get hit in the face a lot. So, you know, I've got to protect the brain, the moneymaker. But yeah, I'm a black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So I got my black belt back in 2019. I've been doing it for about 10 years now. I haven't like, I actually yesterday trained for the first time since like February of 2020, because it turns out that, you know, wrestling around with people, you know, grappling with people is like not super COVID safe. I just wasn't super comfortable with it, but yeah, so I'm getting back into it.
So very sore today is what I'm hearing.
I went light. I'm easing my way into it. You know, I've also got like a ton of injuries that, you know, I'm still like still coming back from. COVID has actually been great for like my overall, like, you know, injury recovery process, terrible in other ways for my health. So I'm trying to like, see like, okay, instead of like going deep into that trough again of, you know, having everything hurt and being like, okay, how much is that surgery going to cost? You know, trying to stay on that healthy track instead.
So what is Brazilian brevity? Yeah. I've got a word.
What is the only thing that you know is fencing and lancing.
Yeah. What's the difference between like Brazilian jiu-jitsu and sort of standard jiu-jitsu from jiu-jitsu?
It's taught in Portuguese.
Yeah. Sometimes I've been to a few classes in Portuguese. I mean, it's all sort of like, yeah, the branding and everything is like very nebulous. So, you know, if you go to a school that teaches jiu-jitsu, you can't always be sure exactly what you're getting. Cause like jiu-jitsu just means martial arts and, you know, Japanese. And so
that's what convenient naming. Like, what are you learning? Martial arts. No, what should we name this?
Yeah. you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu is sort of like a branding around this sort of style of martial art that started in started in Japan as sort of it was like pre-judo. Like, if you know what judo is about, like, you know, it's in the Olympics, people like throw each other and pin each other and stuff like that. And it's a very explosive, like, athletic martial art. It's really fun to watch. At least the highlight reels are really fun to watch. But sort of like pre-judo, there was kind of this, primordial form of that grappling art that got brought to Brazil because there's a huge... a huge population of Japanese people that immigrated to Brazil during that time. And so then it grew there, and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is also very much linked to the history of MMA and the UFC. So like the people that started, the UFC are, they're the Gracie family. There's a part of the Gracie family that started the UFC, and they're also the ones that really popularized and grew this martial art in Brazil and then in America called Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Well, it dominated UFC. Once people started doing BJJ, didn't they just like any martial artist that was doing BJJ would just destroy every other martial arts, from my understanding. And so that's part of what
BJJ already. Popular. I mean, this is pretty good. This is what we got on for.
So I have a question for you, Will. So my understanding is that BJJ is very, very, I don't want to say movement driven, very combination driven, in that you see your opponent doing this. So it's almost like chess, where your opponent does this, you do this, you build on that. And it's interesting here that you have a background in music and classical music in a background, you know, you also enjoy BJJ, which my understanding at the higher levels, which if you're a black belt, you're doing the higher levels. You're really kind of weirdly applying these, the same kind of thinking that I think we do in programming a lot with, solving problems and thinking programmatically. Do you feel like you use the same part of your brain to those things, or are they totally like separate for you?
Yeah. Is there closure script in jiu-jitsu or not? That's the biggest question.
I think that, you know, it's easy to sort of like pull generalizations out of like, you know, all these different like complex topics that, you know, that I participate in and that everyone else participates in. So definitely like, you know, knowing how I learn and how I sort of like think about problems helps me understand how I can apply myself to like, you know, like I programmed for far longer than I've done jiu-jitsu, less time professionally, but, you know, I started programming when I was like, you know, in grade school, just like messing around on, you know, the family computer, going back to like, you know, me being the epitome of millennial. And
MySpace?
I wasn't, you know, I wasn't on the social media train that early, but I guess unless you count Neopets, like is Neopets social media?
Okay.
So I was like really into I didn't play a lot of RuneScape. No. But, you know, it's to bring that back to jiu-jitsu, you know, there's a lot of sort of like analysis that, you know, I apply to like learn like, okay, how should I solve these different problems? How are other people solving those problems? But unlike sort of, you know, programming in ClojureScript, there's a huge like performance part of martial arts. Like when I go to a tournament, for instance, you know, that is an area and a context that like I was super unfamiliar with. Like I kept trying to apply like how do I analyze this and like be more like analytical in my approach to how I'm like combating my opponents in a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu tournament, and it just didn't work. And I had to like learn how to like you know, sort of quiet that analytical part of my brain, mm-hmm. and you know, be more like in the moment and get into a flow and you know, just do what I had trained to do in the weeks and years prior.
I'm not sure if this is like a programming mindset or something, because every time you talk to a programmer, and then if they see like, oh, cooking, it's just like programming. Oh, martial arts, it's just like programming. Like everything is just like programming for some reason.
Well, if you're a programmer, dude, I can tell that the way my brain has fundamentally worked, because I've only started programming recently, and I did MySpace, and then I just didn't own a computer for years and like lived on, you know, just, and now, now I'm super heavy into it, and my brain has changed, and it's recent enough that I can remember and I can realize that the way that I think about problems, the way I solve problems, the way I am just more naturally inclined to solve engineering problems.
Yeah.
It's changed and it's evolved and it's so cool.
But isn't it then, you know, causing kind of a, fucked up situation where you keep thinking everything is an engineering problem, you know, even when you deal with people, even when you deal with, you know, psychological things, even when you deal with everything, everything looks like I can debug the shit out somehow. All I need is a REPL into my dog's brain, you know. it's
but you're me, talking about, that's the exact problem with Facebook and Google, isn't it? Is that they actually think that.
Yeah. To make everything programmable. I mean, leave some shit alone, I guess. You know, then maybe that would be one thing.
That gets me on the social medias. I know how these algorithms work. So I know how to fool some of them. And I just willingly won't do it on some platforms.
I think there was somebody who posted a comment this morning. I read that they were on Facebook, and then they keep liking anti-conservative, anti-church, whatever something, mm-hmm. for whatever the reason, for their personal reasons. And then they get recommended only the conservative stuff, like the ads. Mm-hmm. So someone was saying that the algorithm is not able to figure out whether pro and anti thing is actually a thing, you know? So all it can pick up is the keyword that says conservative. Right, okay. Right. just recommend. It's like you keep, you know, liking, I don't know what kind of person you would be if you click I hate dogs sort of thing. And then you keep getting advertisement for, you know, dogs.
Anyway, yeah, I think even
if we go back to the jiu-jitsu thing, though, that seems to me it's a bit more like Twitch live streaming. You know? <It's>
like, yeah, or
if I'm taking, you know, Jordan's stuff on board, you know.
Yeah.
There's a definite like performance aspect of it. There's also a deep like, you know, analytical aspect. You know, learning sort of the language of, you know, how your body moves and like, you know, all the rules that, you know, like again, like, you know, jiu-jitsu, we're mainly like, you know, wrestling with each other. We're grappling. So I'm not getting punched in the face all the time, which is something that I, enjoy not doing. And, nice. So, and so, you know, there's rules, there's the way that, you know, your body moves. And so and you know, as you get more experienced, you start to be able to like anticipate what other people are going to do. You know, if they also understand how their body moves and how the rules kind of work. And then, you know, you start to build a game around that. Mm-hmm. And so that the analytical thinking of sort of programming is very useful in that aspect of it. But, you know, like, you know, like Vijay was saying, you know, there's a whole realm of it that just, you know, trying to stay in like that analytical part of your brain just doesn't like help you perform at all. And I think that's actually true of programming to some extent too, because, you know, it's easy for me to focus on like, okay, how do I like optimize this like algorithm, or how do I, you know, how do I structure my application, but in a way that is like sort of fits the mechanics of the problem that I'm thinking about. But there's also like, you know, you're communicating intent and all this information through your code and through your documentation to other people. And we don't spend as much time, like that's a much harder problem to sort of like sit down and analyze. You know, it requires more like communication and empathy and like, you know, social like skills.
I think that's why we take the shortcut of, you know, just writing the code, and if it works, then I'm done, you know, instead of worrying about like, well, let's document this. Let's try to explain this shit to someone else.
How do those people, I see all these Twitch streamer coders, and I'm like, how are you able to just sit down for hours at a time and not only write code, but also, you know, I hope you're writing documentation, but and then talk it out at the same at the same time? Because pairing is one thing. Pairing, you know, you can just be like, oh shit, sorry, coworker, let me, my cat, you know, you can pause, you can think, you can go,
You're allowed to do that on a Twitch stream.
On Twitch,
I think if someone tunes in for like 3 hours of 3 hours of Twitch stream, they're going to expect a few. They expect fuck ups. I mean, I think Twitch stream is a bit like many. It's like many things, like this show, or like many things. Everyone likes it when people fuck up. You know, it's like when we do the apropos thing. This YouTube channel, people really like it when we make a mistake in the REPL, or they can send in better examples. They love that kind of shit. You know, so you know, and I think actually, as long as you embrace that you know. There's someone out there on the internet's got a better idea. It's okay, you know, it's all right.
That's true.
I was thinking of starting like a thing like every Saturday, because I usually pick up some random shit that I have no idea about and then try to punch my brain through it. So I was thinking, okay, this is going to be like Saturday Night Live Software Soliloquies or something, you know, like it's going to be the brand. And then I just keep banging, Googling shit and then sharing my screen, and nobody is going to enjoy that show. And that's gonna you know, discourage a generation of programmers. Like, is this what programming is? No fucking way. I'm not gonna get into this shit.
They're already ruined with Copilot. They're already ruined.
I did try it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Whoa. You got VS Code, VJ?
I have every possible editor on my thing, because I need to know, you need to know your enemy. You know, that's the whole idea of martial arts, apparently.
I know.
I got invited. I don't know why. Ah, God. Okay. Well, that's a Gen Z thing.
No. I recommend VS Code for other people that are learning to code, because it's too much to learn Emacs and anything else at the same time. So if you're trying to fix that stuff, use VS Code with Pair Edit so you get some good habits.
Or if
you're doing Python, also PyCharm is pretty great. So okay, IDEs. What IDE do you use, Will?
Yeah, so on that bombshell, we need to know, you know, Will, Emacs or some other shit.
Yeah.
This is going to conclude the podcast, so think carefully.
This is coming. You knew what podcast you were on. You know VJ's question, his main question.
I did. I was going to be actually super sad if we got to the end of this and he hadn't asked me that. Because I am an Emacs user.
We just only got started.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay. Yeah. The world's true editor.
I mean, I can
to the Emacs section.
Emacs podcast. Podcast.
I tried to undo yesterday and it locked up my Emacs, and I was like, you know, for a brief second I was like, you know, maybe I'll switch to
VS Code
or something to VS Code, because I think it's something, you know, messed up. It's definitely a problem with my config, but you know.
No, I have that same problem. My config that, like, I'm telling you, one out of like 1,000 times. It's only 1 out of 1,000 times undo just stops working. Just doesn't work anymore. And I have to like close down Emacs, start it back up, and it'll work for another like 1,000 times.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that you're struggling with Emacs, but you need to understand that Emacs is more like a Buddhist way, like suffering is part of life. So sometimes also, shit hits the ceiling, and then you just accept it. That's taking you to nirvana, you know. You need
also
to accept
Emacs
the suffering.
Is telling you, you have Emacs is telling you, you have to be intentional with your code. Yeah, there is no try. There is no try. Only do.
Exactly.
There's definitely no undo. there is, but it might just, you know, lose all of your work that you just did. No, I mean, I'm super. The thing is that, like, I'm still really bought into, like, the idea of Emacs, of this, like, programmable interactive environment. Like, it's one of the things that I love about, you know, the idea of Clojure and Clojure Script, and this idea of having a programmable environment that I can, like, also have a decent enough text editor in is, like, really attractive. But you know, it's just like in practice sometimes it's a little painful.
Oh, I guess let's get into your before Clojure and how did you find the light?
Yeah, happy to talk about that. I mean, like I said, I started programming a long time ago, but I've sort of always like bounced around like different languages. And so, you know, the project that I used to always do in like every language that I would try was, this was way back in the day, but I would write an IRC bot in it. So I've probably written an IRC bot in like at least a dozen different languages, just to try it out. But, this was
IRC. Not higher C.
No. Yeah.
You need to.
Sorry.
That's pre-millennial IRC.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I know IRC, but the way he said it, higher C, I was like, oh, well, C sucks. Higher C must really. Okay, go on. Sorry.
That is the language of the priests. You know, next level.
I was like,
only available to the higher category of society.
The fuck is higher C? Oh man! Like, okay, so you wrote an IRC bot.
Yeah,
and but this was, you know, I didn't encounter Clojure until I was, I'd been working in the industry for a few years, and I was still, you know, I was writing JavaScript web applications for a living back then. And this was back in, like, you know, there was lots of churn in the language at the time. Like ES6 was like this brand new thing that everyone was talking about. And like, I was getting excited about that, but I was like,
you know,
at the time. Yeah.
It stopped, does it?
Well, you know, now we're on to like ES2030,
yeah, I'm just checking,
or whatever,
yeah.
It is, you know, ES2025. You know, ES6 is like, if you're not supporting that, like, what are you even doing? Which there are plenty of browsers actually that still don't support that, you know, depending on what kind of application you're working on. But I was experimenting with more functional languages, like the JavaScript features that were coming out were sort of like reported as being better because they were more functional. And I was like, oh, functional languages, that sounds interesting. And so I tried like Elixir and Erlang, and I was into that for a minute. And then I started getting into like OCaml. And but, you know, I was bouncing around to all these different languages. And then I did some experiments with like Clojure and Clojure Script. And then I had this opportunity at that job to, we were starting a greenfield project. And I was like, okay, what, you know, I'm going to make the business case here for like, you know, something other than JavaScript and Java, which was kind of what our stack had been up until that point. And I was like, what if we could like unify, you know, the two stacks with one language and like, and sort of like, you know, politically within that organization, there was this big, there was like a split between like you were a web front end developer or you were a back end developer. And I was like, I want to try and fix that as well. I wanted to try and, you know, meet those minds together and, you know, share resources in that way. And so I ended up deciding to pitch Clojure and Clojure Script as the solution to that. And that's where it went from like something that I kind of played with as a hobby to then, okay, now I'm working in Clojure and Clojure Script full time, and doing it as a hobby and you know, open source work and all that stuff. So that's kind of my
So they bought into it, I guess. But what was your pitch actually? Because, you know, that's often it, well, maybe it's like it's just awesome, works, for the people you were talking to, you know, and, you know, and I'm Will. So trust me, I'm an acting. You know, I don't know, but, you know, maybe that's enough. But if you've got any more details, that would be also nice, just in case people still need the bullets, you know?
Yeah, I think, you know, actually, so Derek, the CTO of the company that I work for right now, has a great talk called, I think it's titled like Why ClojureScript, or something to that effect.
I think it's ClojureScript for the skeptics.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. ClojureScript for the skeptics. And that talk actually helped me a ton. I think that, you know, there was, first, I was very lucky in that, like, the boss that I had at the time was very willing to give me, like, autonomy and authority to, like, make some of these decisions and support me in that to, like, people outside of our team. So that was huge. And then, you know, the developers on the team, I kind of laid it out like, listen, we've been building, you know, applications using JavaScript and Java for a long time now. We see some of the warts there and the things that we're starting to adopt, the best practices that we're adopting are basically what's already in Clojure and ClojureScript proper, right? Like they come out of the box with all of these tools to support like immutability and, you know, and we also get, you know, we aren't losing like the ecosystem of libraries that we pull in to like, you know, save labor and stuff like that. So, you know, it definitely wasn't like, unanimous, like, yeah, let's do it. But people were like, yeah, you know, we trust Will and, you know, he's making some good arguments here. Like, let's give it a shot. And so I was very lucky in that regard.
On the timing, was this pre or post Shadow?
This was post Shadow. So that also helped a lot as well, I think, because, you know, so this was back in like 2017, I think. So we definitely adopted Shadow SEAL.js after, you know, I had sort of like tried all of the other things that were out there, because for us, we already had a ton of JavaScript experience. We had libraries that we had built internally that we needed to be able to adopt, and Shadow SEAL.js just made the most sense back then to do that. And so I haven't really like, I've kind of like found my like little home in using Shadow SEAL.js as my build tool. And so.
Isn't this going to be a big argument? I mean, it's not going to be a big argument in your company because, you know, they know you have black belt in jiu-jitsu. So you say ClojureScript, they're like, okay, you know, moving on. You're going to karate chop their head off like with higher C. So some shit is going to happen. Who knows?
So I'm interested on did it work? Because we all know about this this front end, back end developer situation, I will say. So like did it work to unite people? Because even, you know, Clojure and ClojureScript, even though they're the same language, and I'll seduce people into Clojure, I'll tell them it's the same language, same thing. And then like, you know, see the ClojureScript code with like all the hard boys, which are to call I don't even know what it's the official name of, not the parentheses, the brackets.
Yeah.
And it's the workflow is still very different. And thinking in a front end, because you kind of have to embrace mutability when you're doing front end to a certain extent. You know, you can't get it in back end. You can really get away with being like, no, we're not changing things back here. So did it work? Did it work? And follow up question, what do you consider yourself, like in your heart, a front end or a back end or a polyglot?
Okay. Yeah, I think that organizationally it did do what you know, I said that one of the goals was, which was to allow us to, you know, unite the developers, you know, front end and back end. it wasn't just all the language, right? Like this was sort of like a push for us as a team, and like other people, other teams were really pushing to like, because before this project, we even had like separate teams for front end and back end, and that was like awful, you know. And so we were really pushing for like, let's have like, you know, vertical integration in our teams. Like, let's have, you know, the front end and back end guy actually talking to each other rather than like, you know, sort of like throwing tickets over the wall or whatever. And I think it worked out. I think that, you know, that organizational change worked out really well for us. You know, and Clojure and Clojure Script helped because it sort of helped pitch to the business that like, hey, Amy over here can like, you know, she's a backend dev, but you know, she can like come in and like work on some of the front end stuff, and she's not going to be like, she already knows Clojure, so she can like, you know, mess with the syntax. She doesn't have to set up a whole like new like editor and tool chain and stuff like that, mm-hmm. and vice versa, you know. Mm-hmm. But everyone still had their like specialties, and I would say that like at that company, I was very much growing into being like sort of full stack, I guess, is sort of like the term of art that we use these days. Mm-hmm. You know, working a lot on the back end and the front end. And you know, when I joined Amperity, the reason that I joined them was because it was really a chance for me to sort of specialize. And so you know, I've been working, I still make changes all across the code base there, but for the most part, my sort of area of ownership and my specialty is on the front end there.
And in your heart?
In my heart, I mean, so
IRC bots.
I would say like going back even further, like, you know, the my first programming language ever was the Game Maker language. So it was a program for making games, and it had this drag and drop interface, but I was like, oh, it has a language too. And I was like, you know, 11 and had all the free time in the world. So I learned that. But the problem was, is at the time I wasn't very skilled in like art, you know, like making computer art or like writing stories and stuff like that. So I was like, okay, what other thing can I do? So I made, you know, an app essentially with buttons to launch my favorite applications. And, you know, it brought me a lot of joy in my heart to make a button that when I clicked it, it did something. Mm-hmm. And so still to this day, I feel like I have that, you know, feeling of joy in my heart every time I make a button that does something. And so that's why I think in my heart of hearts, I'm a front end developer.
Yes.
So I click the button and then console log, hello world. I'm like, okay, my work here is done. Nice. But what other languages that you experimented with or played with? Because if it is mostly front end, is like CoffeeScript or TypeScript and all this kind of stuff?
Yeah, I've done a lot of TypeScript as well. And the one that I was really, you know, into before I got into Clojure Script was a language called ReasonML. It's like a new syntax developed by Facebook for OCaml that looks more like JavaScript but still has all the same type system. Yeah. And you know, I was at the time they were coming out with like, okay, you write your code, your statically typed code in using this ReasonML syntax, and then you compile it using this compiler called BuckleScript, mm-hmm. and then it comes out as like relatively readable JavaScript. And I was really into that. I really enjoyed that for a little while. Now it's been like rebranded and sort of like changed. Now it's called Rescript, where it's kind of like, instead of being like sort of 2 to 4 separate projects that all work together, now it's like one bundle, which is probably better for a developer experience. And I considered it at the time as well, like, you know, back, you know, when we were starting that new project, like, okay, what if we did like OCaml on the back end and, you know, BuckleScript compiled, you know, OCaml on the front end. But I just didn't see like the, I had experimented with writing like bindings for a few JavaScript libraries in ReasonML, and it was a very painful, arduous process. Like even creating like sound bindings to JavaScript promises, I was having to dive super deep into these like really complex, like type theoretical like constructs to like get there. And I was like, am I going to be able to explain phantom types to like some of my coworkers, like to like, you know, to be able to use some of these libraries that I'm trying to bind to? Probably not. Like I didn't see like, it just wasn't, I didn't see it as very useful. It was very fun. I really enjoyed working within the OCaml type system. There are lots of fun puzzles to like pull apart and like try and piece together there. But yeah, ultimately I was like, I think it makes more sense for us as an organization to use like a dynamic language like Clojure and ClojureScript.
Yeah, just to, on that note, when I've worked with Clojure and ClojureScript, we've usually had some sort of data representation in the middle or some business logic in the middle written in like CLJC. Is that something which you went with as well? Or is that something you adopted? Because, you know, this, I think it's, it started off being pretty, you know, I think it wasn't very well picked up at the beginning, CLJC, but now I think, I feel like more and more libraries are starting to do that, more and more people are starting to get into it, despite some of its warts. You know, are you a fan?
Yeah, I try and write, you know, any library that isn't like targeted to a specific platform. So like Helix is still a bunch of it is CLJC, but that's mainly for like sort of organizationally, like I can have macros and functions in the same like file that might operate at different times in the compiler tool chain. But like other libraries that I've written, like that aren't targeting a specific platform, like the like JavaScript, I try and write them all in CLJC because I think that there's a lot of power in being able to use the same tools on the front end and the back end. Mm-hmm. And you know, at that company, we had like sort of a shared data model that we were also building at the same time. And the way of, you know, talking front end to back end, the sort of the way that we were sharing that was through GraphQL. So we had a GraphQL service that was sort of like, here's everything that you would need to know about a user and their accounts and, you know, all that stuff. And you could talk to that, you know, via the front end or via some other service. And that worked okay. But again, kind of going back to like being constrained by the type system, I felt very constrained by the GraphQL type system. And so I that made a lot of sense for us because like we had JavaScript clients that weren't built in ClojureScript that were starting to adopt that as well. But I think that like if we were all Clojure and all ClojureScript, you know, something in CLJC or something that used Eden as the transport would like make a lot more sense to, you know, handle that sort of like shared business logic and shared like representation of, again, like who a user is, their account information and stuff like that.
Nice. I think before we switch to the next topic, I think we need to address the emergency kitten in the podcast now.
Well, it's,
we have a special guest.
Yeah.
What's his name?
It's a her. She's a lady.
Yeah, come on. What's the cat's pronouns?
I think
Jesus.
I think first,
yeah. You know,
yeah, yeah, didn't even first ask I should my ask cat's pronouns.
Oh. Fair enough.
This is,
yes.
This is pretty girl, pretty lady.
What's her name?
Pretty girl, pretty lady.
All right. Oh, okay. I thought you were just describing her, you know.
I mean, it's a self-describing name. She's a pretty girl. She's a pretty lady. She had another name once, but I haven't used it in like since I got her. When I got her, I named her Luna because I really liked that. I've watched it since then. That anime Sailor Moon when I was younger, I was just obsessed with it. And Luna is the cat. And that,
right. Okay.
And yeah, I watched it as an adult. I'm like, oh, these are not great values for a child to pick up. Okay, scratch that. Scratch. Meow. But I got her, and she's just the prettiest lady. So,
nice. I think we have one more. I was just expecting just one more guest, but then, you know, now we have an even better guest, you know.
Yeah, but you've got your dog in the fucking background as well.
Yeah,
come on.
Let's do a round of pets, border collie, right?
Yes, he's a border collie. His name is Baurik Wahlbagger.
So, okay. That's his name, but what's his like real name? What do you call it?
It's a short. The short version is Bowie. Bowie. I've been told it's like David Bowie, apparently. I didn't know who that guy is, but.
You got to watch Labyrinth.
You thought the knife.
Okay.
You'll get it.
Okay. I have no clue, but every time I take him on a walk or some old people, they ask, what is the name? And then David Bowie. And they're like, let's dance. I'm like, okay, I don't know what let's dance is. Cool, I guess. But actually, he's not named after the music guy. He's named after a character in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So, which is a bit of everything. He's the weird immortal guy who doesn't die. He gets bored. So he decides to insult every being in the universe individually, alphabetically. So that's his mission. So I think that's my dog.
I have a reject library. One day I'll turn it into something that does something, but I still have the GitHub repo just with the name Heart of Gold is a really good. That's going to be one of these days.
Something.
I don't know. Yeah, it's going to be a closure script library of some sort that doesn't do what
it's gonna have
everybody else's closure script libraries already do.
Yeah, because it's going to have the infinite improbability drive.
Yeah, anyway. Exactly. See?
Okay, let's not make this Hitchhiker Guide to the Galaxy podcast. I think I know. Ray has way more software-y dog.
Software?
Software-related dog.
Oh, software-related. Oh, yeah. Well, service-related, please. Yeah. He's called Eula. Which is like an end-user licensing agreement. Yeah. You know, we argued a lot about the name, but in the end we just, you know, and the dog, but in the end we just accepted it. So... and it's complicated. We don't know what's going on there. You know, it's a lot of small print. But, you know,
just scroll up and then say accept. Move on. Agree.
Yeah, exactly.
Should have named it Cookie. Like.
Yeah, he keeps on getting updates, but you know.
What about you, Will?
I personally do not own any pets. I thought about it a lot. I thought I was going to get a dog at some point during the pandemic, but.
Good you didn't get a COVID puppy. Think about all the horrible COVID puppies that are...
Hey, my dog is COVID puppy.
We both got COVID puppies, maybe.
Exactly, yeah.
Other people in my life got COVID puppies, so like I get to, you know, have the benefit of
experience them.
Hanging out with them and like playing with them, and then I get to, you know, eventually they go away.
It's different because, you know, we're never going to have to go back to the office, though. Like,
that's true.
Y'all remember before COVID... It was like not hard. Remote work was, but now it's just like nobody will ever make a programmer. Yeah. Never pay for office space.
Yeah. Because I already changed my job to fully remote. So after getting the dog. So my life is basically being his assistant and his chauffeur, driving him around.
Border collies are hard. I used to have a border collie. Border collies are, you got to entertain them.
Yeah. He's fun. But, Will, I was thinking, asking about pets, you're going to say, oh, my Neopet is still alive. You know, I was expecting.
I have no idea. I have no idea.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Do Neopets die? Like, that would be pretty dark for a children's game. Well, maybe they do.
Philosophical.
Well, let's look into it. Like, where's the server? Like, maybe. Like,
this pet can be rescued.
Gotta get a hacker in to do it.
Yeah.
Oh my god, Mr. Roboto would do that to the animals in Sonic. No? Okay. That's cool.
Anywho, so I think we had music segment, we had, you know, martial arts segment, we had a little bit of closure about somewhere nearby. And then we have pet segment, and then I think we should sneak back in a little bit into closure thing. Because you said you primarily front end, and you've been building front end stuff in ClojureScript. And so, what is your stack? So, is it Reframe, or is it something that you built yourself? Or, you know,
you wouldn't do that. No, come on.
Something.
No one's going to do that.
y'all didn't even listen to the talk that he so kindly linked to us.
Yes,
I was at the gym on the treadmill listening to your talk. Just so you know, like that's yeah. People were giving me looks like, wow, look, that's your usually must be a masochist.
Preparing for podcast this talk wasn't is that not bad.
Come on, Jordan.
No, VJ's just a master of transitions and you know, leading questions. Like he's teeing me up.
No, I'm not leading weird questions. I have no fucking clue. I don't do any preparation, as you can see, for the podcast. Like zero. So all the dumb fucking questions
he asked
I'm asking.
Me who I was at the beginning of the podcast and who's this woman? And who's this bloke with the beard? You know, that's why.
Well, I guess we cannot assume, we shouldn't assume our listeners have watched the talk. So I guess,
yes.
Will, take it away, Will. With
exactly.
Your...
Listeners and me.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've spent like the majority of my time, you know, building UIs in ClojureScript using Reagent and Reframe. You know, in the last year, a little over a year, I've started to adopt this library that I created called Helix, which is a much thinner library around React. You know, because React came out around that time with this feature called React Hooks, which is like a very reagent like API for managing state. It's very similar to like the API that Reagent provides. And, you know, you can build your components as functions and all that. So you don't have to mess with like classes and, you know, it's a little less object oriented. And I was like, oh, well, I could use that and instead. And so, yeah, thus Helix was born, TLDR there. But, how is Helix different from Reagent?
How is it different from Reagent or Reframe and other sorts of approaches? Because we had a wave of React based, or not React based, I mean things that are built on top of React to make easier for ClojureScript, starting from OMNext, RUM,
yeah.
I don't know, Quotient or whatever. There's like many flavors came out, and then finally Reframe became the predominant thing that people are using these days, Reframe plus Reagent, and then now it's like sacrilegious to say, no, we're not using Reframe anymore on the front end. So how is it?
Yeah.
How
sacrilegious.
Is it
wow.
I just wanted to use the word. I don't know what that means. Will, you know.
It's a really good question.
How dare you insult Tony? I mean,
yes, I've fallen a long ways from my high RC days and my high RC days to, you know. I'm now sacrilegious. I think that you know, when I was building UIs using Reagent and Reframe, there were some things that I found frustrating. There were some decisions that were sort of like made for me in there that I was like, what if I could try like other stuff? So, you know, Helix is really like, let's take out some of those features. It has less features than Reagent and Reframe. I think that that's important to communicate because Helix is really like, how can we provide the best interface to like stock React? You know, those other libraries that you mentioned, like OHM and OHMNext and Quiescent and Fulcro, they provide a bunch of stuff that, you know, out of the box for you to like, and generally like opinions on like, here's how you should structure your application. Here's how you should, you know, manage the concerns of like, you know, routing and, you know, other kinds of states. Helix doesn't have any of that. It's really just like, how can I bind to React in a way that feels like nice for ClojureScript developers? And then, you know, the idea is that then that leaves more room for experimentation and things like libraries to manage like data fetching or navigation or other things like that.
So, so you actually did the proper thing and made a library, not a framework.
I mean, React itself is like its own like framework. Like React has a lot of stuff that it wants to manage for you. And if you want to manage it outside of React, there's like trade-offs to that. Mm. And so that was the reason that like, you know, with Reagent, you know, managing all of your state in like an atom that lives outside of the component tree was a decision that was made for me by Reagent. And it made, and mm-hmm. I was like, you know, well, what if I want to use like local component state, truly like, you know, the React feature of that? It was really difficult in Reagent. And so, yeah, I think that the, I was trying to, like, React already has a lot of ideas that are in its core, that are core to Clojure. And so I was like, well, what if I just ran with that rather than, you know, trying to build something on top of it?
So is there a way to mix Helix and Reagent? Like, if you just, let's just say you happen to have a couple of big old production apps that are Reagent and Reframe, and you wanted to like just like dip your toe in, like, what's up with this Helix stuff? Because it's, as someone who's kind of made a career out of Reagent and Reframe now, I'm
expanding the portfolio.
I do see, you start to see the cracks, I guess. And buyer's but also regret. Yeah. and then it's like
Reagent,
oh, well,
Reframe, cool. Regret.
First, ooh, you see, yeah, through the Reframe thing, you're like, wait, Reframe is just Reagent with state managed. It's just like predefined state management for Reagent. Why am I not just using Reagent? And then use Reagent, you're like, why am I not just using React? Oh, wait, that's why. So is that, I guess, like, back to the question. Like, is there a way to like dip your toe in, see what's up with Helix, but not just like, you know, make the decision, just like flip your application upside down?
Just create a new branch, yeah, remove Reframe and Reagent, and then add Helix as the dependency, and then get started.
Yeah, there's definitely a way that, so that's the reality that we are in at Imperity right now, is that, you know, we have this very large, you know, it's like, tens of thousands of lines of code, you know, one of the largest Reframe applications that I've worked on.
How long is the events namespace?
I mean, luckily we split those out long ago, but yeah, there's a lot of events, a lot of subscriptions, a lot of, you know, code that we've written, you know, using those tools. And so, you know, when we started to adopt Helix, we didn't want to have to go like rewrite everything from scratch. So, you know, Reagent actually is like very, you can kind of separate Reagent into like, it's almost two different libraries. Mm-hmm. One is the binding to React. And so it's like, you know, taking like the hiccup data structures that you write, the vectors and maps and keywords and stuff, and converting those into React components, or React elements, and then rendering them. And then there's this other part of the application that's like all of the like reactive atom stuff. Mm-hmm. And so the way
state
that we
management.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, nobody can see my air quotes. I air quoted the state management because just in relation to your talk, what about state management? You're like, I'm tired of,
yeah,
what even is state management?
What is that? I would ask.
I think, what the fuck is state management, to be, you know, just to quote you properly, you know. I think you cleaned it up, but, you know, I'll get done and dirty again.
We'll translate the statements more palatable to deaf an audience, you know, because exactly, they don't understand the normal, okay, dialect.
You're right. I gotta shake loose a little bit. I gotta, you know, like, I can, this is a safe space. I can say what I feel.
Nobody listens to this crap, yes, man, so don't worry.
Yeah, so like, what the fuck is state management?
Exactly.
And we can get into that, but I want to answer your question first about, please, like, you know, can you use Reagent and Helix? And the answer is yes, absolutely yes. You know, you can, Reagent is actually like very permissible in that, like, if you just sort of plop a React element inside of your hiccup, it just works. So like, if you render a Helix component in the middle of your hiccup, then it'll just work. And then likewise, you know, I haven't gotten around to like open sourcing this yet, but, you know, you can write a pretty small sort of like translation layer between the reactive atoms that Reagent has and two React hooks. So like, you know, at work we have a like you know, use reaction hook that you can just pass it like any Radom or Reframe subscription or anything, and it'll just, you know, re-render your Helix component based on like any state changes there.
Oh, so that's the answer, because I've been trying to figure out how to get in. I've been procrastinating getting in on that, like React hooks. I've been procrastinating. I'm like, oh, I guess this is really a thing I got to learn now. Okay, so Helix can be a key to that, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, that was kind of the original goal with Helix was, you know, I wanted to experiment with React hooks and see what it was like to create a binding to React that allowed me to just use React hooks for state management. Mm-hmm. And so Helix was sort of that. I will say that, you know, we did, to talk a little bit more about the experience of, you know, mixing Reframe, Reagent, and Helix. We did at first try and be like, okay, we're only going to use hooks for state management. We're not going to use, we're going to like, you know, totally disregard Reframe and Reagent totally. And we found that that was actually like not the best way to go about it. It became like, you know, the stock, there's a reason that Reframe and, you know, other solutions similar to it exist, which is that, you know, managing things like data fetching and stuff that, you know, with data that sort of exists outside of the lifecycle of a component, it becomes really difficult to manage that just in local component state. And so having a way of managing those outside of the component tree is important. And so we still use Reframe for things like data fetching and navigation and other stuff like that in our application today. But we find that a lot of sort of like the core work of like building, you know, user interfaces that like when you click the button, something happens, you know, that can be done mostly with Helix and local component state.
So for people like me, explain like, I'm the dumb fucking idiot sort of thing. what is this React hook that you're talking about?
Yeah, I think, you know, if people are familiar with Reagent, then, you know, Reagent allows you to create like atoms at sort of like construction. So, you know, there's like the form two components as the term that they use. And so you can create like local atoms that then will re-render your component every time they change within the body of your component, wherever they're dereferenced. And React hooks is like a very mechanically similar API for doing that. So instead of like before the React hooks feature came out, if you wanted to manage some state inside of your components, you had to use a class. So you had to construct a class that extended the react.component class, and then you would call like this.setState and, you know, a method inside of your event handlers and all that. And it was very clunky. It was hard to like compose behaviors. So if you had, you know, components that all like, you know, had some like, I don't know, some behavior that that had like both state and side effects and everything, it was like hard to like pull that out of the component and share that across components code wise. And so React hooks is something that like you can just write your component as a function that returns React elements. And then inside of the body of the component, you can call another function called like use state, which will then return you, you know, a tuple of like the current state and a function to change that state. And it's stable over re-renders. So you don't have to like, you know, set stuff up in like the constructor of a class. You just call this function inside of the body of your component and then use the values that it returns to read the state and set the state.
Okay. So this is, how did the name Helix come from? What's up with the name? Is it something like a, what is it again? The manifesto level stuff or some punk rock thing? Because the only Helix thing that I know is that, you know, the some of the people who wanted to understand DNA thing, they were sleeping and then they dreamt about this structure, the scientists. So did you dream about this helical structure in the code somewhere?
No, it actually, so Helix actually started like the sort of the fundamental parts, like the bits and pieces that are there today, grew out of another library that I had written called Ajax. Mm-hmm. And Ajax was a library for parsing Hiccup into React elements. And so like that name was sort of like, I don't know, like Hiccup transformation. I was going for something there, like Ajax, just, I don't know. The letter X is cool, I guess.
Okay, nice. Follow-up question. Tell me about the name Lilac Town.
Lilac Town? It is an anagram of my name. So Will Acton is you know, if you shuffle the letters around.
Okay, you shut the fuck up, Lilac Town. You clever cat, you.
Well, there's no W in it.
There is Town.
Yeah, there is.
Oh, damn.
What? There is Town.
How do you spell Town?
Yeah.
Oh my God. And he's the English guy in this podcast.
If you're listening, cut this out. Okay.
No, keep that in. Oh, people need to know that Ray's English is before W was introduced into English language. I don't know. His English is from, I don't know, Germanic nomadic sort of days.
Pre-WWW, you know, I didn't know.
Not everyone is good at like visualizing, you know, the way that words are spelled, stuff like that.
Thank you, Will.
Yeah. I love it. He's just ensuring there's no way to cut this out. Like the logic, no way to like have this make sense.
We don't cut anything out.
Okay. So wait, what about the octopus though?
The octopus? I don't know. I just
you
like
have, you have like a little like mirror guy like next to you. Like, I thought it was related. I'm not like, what is this cult? Can I join? I really like purple. Is lavender? Can I be like Lavender City? Like Lavender Road or something? Lavender Lane.
Yeah. Lilac Town, Lavender Lane. Nice. So, so you said there are, obviously, Helix is open source thing, right? People can use it, and then they need to just remove reframe and reagent, and then replace everything with Helix. That's what you said.
Exactly. That's exactly pretty much what I said.
Yes.
Verbatim.
Yeah. I don't paraphrase anything, man. You know, I'm here to just deliver the guests. You know, but yeah. So there is a certain sense of pluggability, so you can easily introduce Helix. So this part is completely open source, and you said there are a couple of things that are you're still working on. And what is the plan? Like, do you want to? Is it like some of those closure libraries where they're finished? You know, well they're complete, not finished. You know, they're complete. Is Helix is a complete library that you can use to build things, or there are more things that are coming from Lilac Town?
And Ajax is complete. Same question, Ajax. Yeah. I know the answer, but I read your blog. Go on.
Yeah. I think, you know, I'm kind of done working on Ajax. I just don't have a lot of interest in it. There's still some people that use it. And I've been, someone a while ago talked to me about like taking it over. And I didn't respond. And I feel bad about that still. I don't know. I'm like in and out of like, sometimes I'm just like, I can't even look at a computer after I'm done with work. So
yes.
I just, you know, so I apologize for people that reach out to me on like Clojure and Slack. I do appreciate the messages. And I do think that the people that are still using that library, you know, they should be able to like fix some of the bugs that are in there and stuff like that. But it's not something that I use every day. So it's a little bit harder for me to like find all of those rough edges and spend the time fixing them. But with Helix, there's definitely still some things that I want to do before I call it done. There's some decisions that I made early on about like little decisions, little details of the library that I'm like, I wish I could fix that. Like the way that it converts like the props that you write, that you're passing into your component, the way that it rewrites those from like, it tries to be smart, which is always like a dumb thing to do, right? Like it tries to detect like when should it like, you know, convert your props from kebab case to camel case and like, you know, some other stuff like that. that it just turns out like isn't true in all scenarios and is like frustrating to try and like work around when it's trying to be smart for you and it's actually being really dumb. And so I'd like to kind of like rip that part out and provide it as like its own macro or function that you can adopt when you know you need it. And then some other like kind of rearranging. The big thing that I think that Helix provides, other than just a like, you know, an API for React, is also the sort of more experimental features that I've been working on are like doing static analysis for your components. So detecting like, we've been talking about React hooks. There are all these like rules about how you can use hooks. Like you can't use them inside of conditionals or loops. And that's like something that React, you know, has like extensive documentation for. And in the JavaScript community, there are like linters and things that will check that for you. And so recently I shipped a version of Helix that will check that at compile time to ensure that you're not calling a hook inside of a loop or conditional or other things that would break those rules and cause like bugs or things to fail in production. And I think that I kind of want to keep like leaning into that where, you know, less runtime stuff, less like trying to build like, you know, state management features or other things inside of Helix, but rather like, how can we make the developer experience for someone who's building user interfaces like really, really good and provide a base for those other solutions to be pulled in as libraries?
Nice. Mm. So is there a way for people to contribute to this vision that you have right now? Is it something that people can go to GitHub and then poke you when you're off the computer, you know, call you and send you snail mail and, you know,
feature toggle. Looking forward to that feature toggle. Is that in there and yet?
Well, it was actually, you know, that feature of like, you know, analyzing your component and telling you when you're breaking the rules. That was behind a feature flag for like, I don't know, 8 months or something like that. And I recently, the most recent version has it turned on by default. So, you know, if people are using it and they're getting errors when they think they shouldn't, please open a bug report. But you know, I've been using it for a while. Or a PR. Nothing worse than getting a bug report without a PR.
Stop complaining.
That means I have to do the work. No, it's actually really funny. So Dominic was on the podcast like I don't know, maybe last episode or like a few episodes ago. And he was talking about how, you know, he tries to get other people to do like the work of like fixing bugs and stuff like that. I was like, that's what he's trying to do. That's why he keeps reporting these bugs. And then I'm like, great. I see that you already know what's wrong and how to fix it. Open a PR for me, please. And he's like, oh, yeah, maybe I will. Like, maybe.
Sust.
No. Yeah, he's been, he actually found a bug in the like hooks rule detection recently when you're trying to use hooks inside of JavaScript values. And he did open a pull request. So thank you, Dominic, if you're listening, but still, I feel like we're in like a stalemate because I'm like, I want to get as much work out of, you know, people who are using my library as possible. And he's like, I want to, you know, get as much work out of Will at least here as possible. And we're,
you know, battling.
No. He just has contributed a few times to Helix.
Oh, okay. I thought you said you worked with him and I was.
I'm pretty sure I'll remind him to listen to the episode so he knows, you know.
Great.
we know his tricks now. So I think people need to subscribe to your you know, GitHub issues to see the back and forth between you and him. Like, yeah, no, you fix it. No, you fix it. Yeah, it's your library. You fix it.
A lot of it happens in the Helix Clojurians channel.
Oh, nice. It disappears.
Yeah, he'll come in and he'll write this super detailed analysis of like, here's like what's not working, and then he like dives into the Helix source code and he's like, I think this is the part that's like, you know, not working correctly, and here's I think how we could fix it. And I'm like, Dominic, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for all that. Like, will you open a PR for me? And he's like, no.
He's like giving you the line numbers and column numbers and you know, what needs to be placed. And I'm going to type all the things that you're supposed to do.
I can't even hate because I've totally done that before.
I'm just throwing shade at him. I mean, there is like work that it's involved in, like, you know, creating like a, you know, actual like production ready pull request and, you know, ensuring that it passes all of my, you know, style, you know, stylistic things. So, you know, just his diagnosis alone is worth a lot to me. So I appreciate it.
You can enforce rules. You can be very, what's that? CLJS style. What are the ones? Okay. There's CLJ condo, which is so polite and so nice. It's like, hey, by the way, this isn't great style, but no big deal. It's all right. And then some people are like, well, why doesn't CLJ go fix it? I don't want it fixing it. Maybe I want it to be bad code. What do you know about me? Like, I know the do is needless. Say less. Like, I get it. But
we like scumbag coding, you know? Shut up. Yeah.
But that's an open source project I was involved in for just a glimmer in time was the Athens project.
Yeah, it's a Rome research thing, right?
Yes.
But open source Rome research thing.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. That's the note-taking toolkit community. And Jeff Tang had all sorts, like, I will say, if anybody needs just a CLJS repo with just like the kitchen sink. I mean, we got everything set up. Like he got everything. It uses a like DataScript, dev card, CLJS style, like doing all the bells and whistles to like try and, I don't want to say control, but like all the bells and whistles of a CLJS app. They got it.
Okay.
I kind of think something go on.
I think that can serve as an example, like, you know, like the how to use some library. You just go to Athens Research and then just see the code there.
It will serve
as a, like a nice documentation for everything. I don't know if you know, there is a programming system called OZ. It's probably some sort of like a research thingy. They have every possible paradigm built into the language, like everything. If from structure, the imperative shit to structural things to object-orientedness to functional thing, and then message passing, like every fucking thing into one language. I'm like, okay, this is the only language that I need to learn.
Well, isn't that the mission of Scala as well? So.
No, Scala is halfway there.
I should know some more about Scala because people tell me like, oh, functional, like other, it's so weird talking to other devs that aren't like so deep in this area. Cause they're like, people are like, oh, like functional programming. Like, oh yeah, I've done Scala. I'm like,
you're like, no way, that's not functional programming.
I just kind of nod and swallow because I don't know enough about it to like fight about it. You know, like, that's a lot of things. I talk way too much for someone who does not know enough.
anyway, let's get back to Will. Come on.
Yeah, so
yeah,
he's still here.
I'm thinking if you zoom out a little bit now, because if you spent enough time in ClojureScript, you know, building library, interacting with the community, apparently you spoke on YouTube thingy that I don't know about, but you know, I'm sure also. I'm curious about your view on Clojure in general, Clojure and ClojureScript, because you also, you know, work with OCaml a little bit, ReasonML. So there are like typing things there, and then you come to Clojure. JavaScript is like a Wild West sort of shit for typing. How do you see the Clojure ecosystem and Clojure community? What do you like and what you kind of put up with?
Well, reagent is what I used to put up with.
not anymore.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, I still do. I still write reagent code, you know, every day. Probably will for the foreseeable future. I think that Clojure and ClojureScript, it's been very interesting because I think that talking less about like sort of the programming paradigm and more about like, you know, what do I see other people using it for? What do I see like out in the, you know, rest of the industry? I mean, there's lots of companies that are being built in Clojure and ClojureScript right now that, you know, have been building in Clojure and ClojureScript kind of like almost stealth, you know, for years now. And so I think that, you know, from a professional standpoint, like, it seems like there's a big market for people who are experienced in Clojure and ClojureScript and, you know, can kind of carve out a niche there. I think that, you know, when it comes to building products in Clojure and ClojureScript, there's, you know, I think that the things that are really, I miss every time I go and try out another language are things like Eden, like having a, like, transport, like, because like Eden is like what we write code in Clojure, but it's also like a wire transport, like a way of communicating about data between like different services or between the front end and back end. And that's like super powerful that like the only other really mainstream language that we have that going on in is JavaScript. And, you know, JSON is not a very rich language for doing that kind of stuff. Eden has like a ton of benefits over JSON. And so, you know, that's the thing that I think, that's one thing that I really miss, you know, trying to use other languages to build products. And then, but there's still like, one of the things that I think is tricky in Clojure is there's all these best practices that have been developed in other languages that we often bring into Clojure. That, you know, those best practices were developed within the context of like, C++ or Java or, you know, or TypeScript or whatever, you know, they have like mechanical sympathies with like a type system or like other ways of like structuring code that are specific to that language. And when you bring them into a dynamic language like Clojure, they tend to fall apart at scale, in my experience. Like, like honestly, I don't know if React wasn't such a behemoth of like, just like, you know, mindshare and like the millions of dollars of like R&D and development that has gone into, you know, making it as hardened as it is for, like it basically serves as a universal runtime for user interfaces, but. Yeah. You know, React also like grew up in this context of Facebook building user interfaces that they use a type system, they use Flow, or you know, a lot of people in the industry are adopting TypeScript now because like the way that you write components and you know, construct elements out of them, there's a lot of mechanical sympathy between, you know, the way that you write the code and having a type system to check that you're passing in all of these props and stuff to them correctly. And so, you know, there's, what am I rambling about? What I'm saying is that, like, I think that there's a lot of room for experimentation in Clojure and ClojureScript there. And I think that the more companies that are actually like investing dollars into the development of Clojure and ClojureScript, there are, the more that we're going to see those, that kind of innovation come out of like, what's a solution that really works well in a dynamic language like Clojure is so something that I'm interested to see.
Let me ask you, as far as, what are your views on like spec, Molly, all of the, you know, spec, I'll just say spec like things that are, you know, kind of, there's this argument of, it can be better than a type system if you just, you know, use it the right way. What are your thoughts on that? Do you have a, you know, one of those that you subscribe to, you know, having worked with typed systems as much as, you know?
I think that we use spec a lot. I've used spec a lot more for like defining like it, more for defining like the domain that we're working in. So like, you know, when we have a new like domain entity, the first thing that we do is we write specs for like the attributes that they have and like the shape that it has. And I find that very useful, mainly from a documentation standpoint of being able to go and look at like, you know, entity.core and mm-hmm. see like, okay, here's all the attributes that may or may not show up inside of this entity. But when it comes to sort of like, you know, validation of more stuff that like I kind of think about it as like there's sort of two hats that you might be wearing when you're working within a product. One is the like the sort of product engineer, which is like I'm going in and I'm trying to build a part of the system that does something. So I'm trying to you know, make a button that when you click it, it like, you know, adds a thing to your cart or you know, kicks off some backend process or whatever. And it's using these domain entities to like, you know, do all of that, but you're not really in the business of defining those. And so I find that spec is not super useful in that when I'm wearing that hat, because like, if my user interface is in charge of running those specs and using it to validate these entities that I'm either constructing or consuming, a lot of times when I'm doing UI development, you know, those are hot paths that like, you know, if a spec validation takes like 20 milliseconds to, you know, validate this like deep data structure that I'm generating or consuming, then I just blew my like frame allotment, right? It's a very tight, like you essentially have like about 16 milliseconds before you start to see the user interface degrade in performance. And so I really want to be intentional about like how I use that. And so doing a bunch of spec validation inside of the user interface, like, you know, when things are being passed into components or whatnot, is not, in my experience, something that is like good for the user's experience.
Well, you can do what I call the poor man's spec. And I just have been, I just write the fuck out of doc strings. I know it doesn't count as any sort of real catching, but I mean, hey, all it takes is this thing takes this and outputs this. And I hope you're using a REPL.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the other thing is that specs can, well, if you do it right, you can have instrumentation for your specs that is turned on when you want it turned on and turned off when you don't want it turned on, you know.
Mm.
You can have instrument and instrument. The new word, instrument, you know, so musical like, instrument.
So keep your spec on when you're in development, but then not on production? Is that what?
That's what it's meant for. I mean, I mean, to be honest, I think it's, I mean, well, maybe Will has to have last word on this, but you know, it's a lot of work for relatively small gains, I think. And I like these libraries where the specs are inside of the defens rather than sort of, you know, like if fdefs and they're all, it's sort of like that becomes tedious and annoying to write all these externalized things. So I like Orchestra, for example. That's a good library where you get these things inside of your defens, and then you can turn instrumentation on and off as you wish per namespace or whatever. So that's pretty good. Sorry, Will. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like the times that I've played with stuff like that, I've still ran into like, you know, oh man, I just passed in this like really deep data structure that like has all of these specs in it. Like, you know, it's not impacting the user experience, but now it's impacting the developer experience, and that like, you know, it has to, it's still impacting the developer experience, where now I'm having to like sit there and wait for like a second or two while it checks my spec to make sure that, you know, the data is valid. Think that, you know, using spec at like the edges of your system, you know, like when you're sending data or when you receive it on the back end, for instance, and then before you send it to the front end, those work really well. And I haven't used Mally, but I imagine that, you know, same thing there. But like specing components is something that I've played with a bit. I've experimented with it, and it's been really difficult. So that's kind of where I was talking about, like with the two hats, like one is sort of like the product engineer, where like I'm building, you know, user interface or parts of the system that's like going to do work. And I find spec less useful for that. And then there's like the, more, I guess, architect hat that I might put on, where I'm like, okay, what's my domain entities? How do I provide documentation and validation and parsing for these that people can use, like sort of at the edges of their programs? Mm-hmm. And that's where I think that like Spec and Mally and other libraries like that really shine.
So I got to ask you about your ClojureScript and a lot of all these things. Now, are you keeping an eye on Dart, Flutter way of building front end? And what do you think about it? Because I know Christoph Grahn and then, but I think Baptiste, somebody, they're building like a Dart integration with ClojureScript, something like that. It's only a couple of tweets. I vaguely remember what they were doing. I didn't dig deeper into that one. So what's your view on like Flutter and then Dart as a language and how that is going to change the way that you're building the UI? Because the declarative UI seems to be a big deal. If you see Swift UI, you know, all these things are picking up that direction.
Yeah, I haven't experimented with Dart yet or Flutter. I think that they're really interesting. A lot of it is just like, you know, I think that the Clojure Dart project is exciting to me because it means that I'll be able to like probably have it. It'll be an easier jumping off point into like experimenting with that than like, okay, I gotta install like all these IDEs and like you know, understand like Dart the syntax and like, you know, my brain is too full of other things right now to like, you know, think about that stuff. So, but I think that it's really, there's still a part of me that is suspicious of whether Google will continue to fund Dart and Flutter, right? Like there's a whole like, you know, killed by Google. Like I think that Google, that's really what it's about.
Symmetry. Yeah.
Is that, that's their thing. You know, targeting native, like truly like the native APIs of iOS and Android, it's a moving target. It's, and that can be really frustrating, but you know that like, unless people stop using iPhones, this is still going to be like, you know, a reasonable way of writing my application. Same thing with the web, right? Like web browsers are not going away. There's so much like, except value captured in the home. yeah, exactly. But like, you know, there's always going to be like
another
for the foreseeable future, building user interfaces for web browsers is going to be a great way of like providing, you know, an experience for people that they can use. With Flutter, I'm still just a little nervous that, you know, maybe it's not this year, maybe it's not next year, but like 3 years, 5 years down the road, you know, there might be like a reorg in Google and then suddenly like it's without funding. And, you know, then, and the way that they're doing it is, you know, for listeners that aren't familiar with it, like Flutter is like a complete re-implementation of the platform's, like, you know, UI constructs. So instead of like binding to like, you know,
the native
Cocoa or Swift UI or something like that. You know, they're drawing all of the stuff on a canvas and it's, and they're trying to get to do their best to get like this, the same, UI and behavior.
It's like the AWT in Java again, you know, like back to that level.
And so that's like just incredibly labor intensive and it's based on like, you know, is there going to continue to be funding for that to ensure that they, you know, keep parity with, you know, the way that the platforms behave and look.
That's a,
so that's my like sort of, you know, pointing a critical eye at Dart and Flutter, but I also think that, you know, targeting it is, with a Clojure, you know, dialect is also like a really great plan because it very well could be that, you know, this provides like a way of getting native performance on like devices other than like servers and desktops. So that sounds really cool.
So what camp do you land in? SPA? I know you like SKA.
No. Get it up there, BJ. Come on.
Okay. I know you like single page attribution.
That is a bit of a, sorry.
Okay. Refocus. single page application or native app? If you know your perfect work, what do you pros, cons, likes, thoughts?
Yeah, this is why I'm like a terrible thought leader, is because like I'm always going to come in with an it depends, and I'm going to add more ambiguity to the situation rather than be like, this is the way. Because I do think that it's going to depend on like, you know, what you're trying to do, what your funding is, you know, all that stuff. I do really like native applications. I like the way that they behave, like especially if I'm interacting with it on a smartphone. And also, there's just like, you know, offline support and other things that, you know, even if you're using it on a desktop, like those are things that are really hard to build into a web application. There are people that do that, but it's a ton of labor, and it's easier to do that with a desktop application in my experience. But, you know, the reach of web applications is just like, you know, hard to beat. And so, you know, when you're looking at it, it really is more tied to like, how are people paying for this, right? Mm-hmm. If you're paying for a service that, you know, you pay monthly to like access some service, then like a web application is probably going to make more sense for me, the user, and for the business to use, right? Mm-hmm. But if it's something that I buy as like a one-time like transaction, and then I have this application for like, you know, until my computer dies or whatever, I think that, you know, a native application, it like makes more sense from a funding perspective. So that's my very medium take.
Diplomatic.
That makes sense. So I think we are almost reaching 90 minutes. Before we continue to punk rock again, our punk reggae rock thing.
You got it. See, Scott, you got it.
See, yeah, exactly. I mean, I just need to know the terms, and then, you know. So now I can say, oh, I know punk rock thing. I think it's one of those, what is it again? Manifesto stuff. And then everybody thinks I'm hip now.
No, you could fall into some weird corners of punk, though, if you start talking about manifestos.
I have no clue. But any things that we missed, Will, from your experience, or you know, did we touch up all the topics, or we have to do episode 2 with you again? Obviously, we have.
I mean,
to.
I'd always be happy to come on and you know, talk about. I'll definitely pick a different shirt next time, preferably one.
No,
without,
you can't. You
of
can't
bands
anymore
or,
because
or,
you know.
Okay, don't be greedy, VJ. You can't have episode 2. Give some to Lost and Lambdas. Okay, I got a baby podcast. Okay.
Yeah, he doesn't like to cross promote. Come on.
Let me get Lilac Town. Jeez, selfish.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, you know, we are like
we are cross posting this. Come on,
exactly. We're like Disney plus Empire now, you know, in the Closure podcast world. Like, Defen is like Disney plus level. So we acquired every possible, you know, guest possible, every possible media thing. Anyway.
It's so hard. Oh, it's so hard getting guests trying to not overlap, y'all.
Yeah, because it's a smaller group, but I think it's good that they talk to different people, right? Because if they're coming on Defen, it's mostly you know, me and Ray bullshitting. So you know, obviously if they go to the
that's
other podcast,
that's what I bullshit. I'm a bullshitter. I know we can't have
no,
the same.
No. You can't steal our thunder.
I'll just add some pink and purple and like just it's we. Called rebrand. It's called rebranding. Okay.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah.
Okay, questions for Will, though.
Varieties of bullshit can, you know, be coexist. It's okay.
I stole your question, Will. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
I don't know. I think, I think we basically covered it.
Nice. But you should, I mean, obviously, you need to go and then, you know, get into the podcast on What's the new name again? Instead of Lilac Town, it was Purple Lane something. You're going to come up with a new name now.
Your Lilac Town will be Lavender Lane.
Yeah, Lavender Lane. Sorry.
Sounds like a name that...
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I won't go with Lavender Lane.
maybe not a good idea. It sounds like a dodgy street in Amsterdam, but yeah. Anyway, so obviously, you know, people need to listen to Jordan as well. And it was super, super fun to have you on the show, Will. Lovely to talk to you. And finally, I know about punk and rock and reggae and everything now.
And ClojureScript.
And React Hooks.
Yeah, a little bit, I guess.
React Hooks. The new hotness, React Hooks.
I am hooked. Yeah. So,
oh, Jesus.
We're going to
edit that out. I can't.
If there is one thing that the listeners should take away from this is that Will is a brand ambassador for this street light manifesto. So that's one thing that you guys need to remember.
Oh, no. And also, Black Belt BJJ. I think that's another very BJJ. Relevant detail. Oh,
exactly. Yeah. And also check out this small thing in ClojureScript that he's doing called Helix, and try to send him PRs so he'll be happy.
But only PRs on only Ajax. PRs.
Yes.
Actually, this is a small thing, though, actually, Will. Is it? Do you do the GitHub sponsors thing? Is that something that you're looking for?
GitHub sponsors or?
You know, I've thought about it. I've thought about like looking for funding for some of my open source projects before. And I just wasn't, I haven't been in a spot where I felt good about like taking people's money. You know, not that anyone would necessarily increase their expectations of me, but I would feel obligated to like do maybe more than I have.
It's very stressful.
Yeah, I just haven't wanted that stress yet, but I am still thinking about that. I probably will at some point. If I don't get fired for doing this podcast, then
well, you can blame Lost in Lambdas for that one. We've never had anyone fired before, so.
No,
but if you decide to go pull the trigger on that, yeah, you should talk to Jordan. You know,
okay. Hey, we can hire you at my company. Actually, we'll just steal. It was all a ploy. It was all a ploy to steal you.
I think that is the reason. The question, like, can I introduce Helix teeny tiny bit? You know, and then we get Will to the company.
Actually, that was a question from my CTO. As a matter of fact, because I go to my coworkers before I talk to somebody. Like, hey, any burning questions? Anybody want to know anything? And that, as a matter of fact, that was his question.
Nice. Yeah.
Hey, Rob.
All right.
Yeah. I've gotten that question enough times at this point that, you know, at some point I will like sit down and put pen to paper and actually write like a blog post or something about like, you know, this is kind of like mechanically how to do it. And also like, this has been our experience. I think that would be really valuable for me to do to sort of collect my thoughts on it. And also for, you know, the rest of the community. Cause yeah, like people are starting at different places. You know, some people are doing greenfield stuff and they look around and they're like, oh, we'll take Helix. Other people have long standing. I think that's the other thing that is interesting to me, like looking at the Clojure and ClojureScript community, is that a lot of the applications that are being built are applications that have been around for a number of years and are expected to exist for many, many years to come. And I think that like drives us towards like different solutions than like, like Ruby on Rails and like, you know, in Elixir, there's like the Phoenix framework. And like those are very useful for like, you know, consultants that are like spinning up a new application. Or I think like, you know, was it Dominic that was talking about and stuff? Yep. Yeah. So that's like those are solutions to problems that like I just don't have right now because I work on an application that has existed for 4 years already and is going to exist for, you know, hopefully a lot longer than that. And so, you know, having resources for, you know, okay, I need to spin up a project from scratch. How do I do that? Is very useful. Having like documentation and blog posts and guides and stuff like that for like, how do I migrate an application that I maybe started like 5 years ago to like the latest stuff is also something that I think would be great to see in the closure community. I'd like to pitch in when I can.
I think the thing for me though about what you've done, I mean, I think what you've done is pretty special, in fact, Will, is this like being brave enough to kind of like take on existing thoughts and existing sort of thought leadership, if you like, in the closure script space, and say, you know what, actually, these React people, they haven't done a bad job. You know, they've built things up over the past couple of years. They've put a lot of money into it, like you say. Let's see if we can just make more use of the raw materials. And I think that's, you know, I think people have been wanting to pull the trigger on that for a while, I think. And I think this hooks thing is definitely been a reason to do it. So, you know, I think it's really great what you've done. And I imagine that a lot of people are quite excited about Helix. And it's always great to talk to people who've kind of like, I think closure to some extent is a little bit of a kind of like that. It's a bit countercultural. It's a bit like, you know, respects and accommodates new bits of thinking. You know, it's rad. It's horny. So yeah, I think it's really good. And congratulations on, you know, on getting it, you know, beyond kind of like a thought into the real world. That's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
So a big, big thank you to you, Will, for joining us and sharing your thoughts on Helix and everything. And I'm pretty sure people are going to check out your blog. And then if there is an opportunity to contribute in whatever the way, you know, I think we encourage the people to do that. And speaking of money, so go ahead and check out our Patreon and then give us money.
Hey!
Man, there are really nice people who have been, there are a few new Patreon people who are supporting the podcast. That's a big thank you to everyone. And we are thinking of doing something like a Twitter Spaces or something, depending on schedule. So we'll do something exclusively for patrons. And having said that, I think, Jordan, if you can wrap up, you know, please tell us what next plans that you have on your podcast, so people will, you know, stop listening to our bullshit. And then
come on, pitch Lost in Lambdas a little bit. Come on, we haven't given you much of a chance, actually.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, what had happened was I was getting my tweets on, and Bork Dude was the one that, I mean, it's not really much of a story. I just like to talk so much. And I just, I like to talk to people, and I really like to, I think it's important to humanize these developers. And I think that these experiences talking and having real conversations with these, you know, these screen names at Lilac Town, at work, you know, and we forget that they're people, and they have, you know, hobbies like BJJ and, you know, and hiking and reading and just all these things. And I think it's really important to humanize, as somebody who weirdly, learns best, when I have an, I guess an emotional interest tie, into something, I will learn, like I learn best in school if I like the teacher. And I think a lot of people are like that. Yeah. And if you humanize and you look at the developers, you know, you can be involved with the projects more. You can, you know, just appreciate things more and really just having fun. So yeah, Lost in Lambdas. I will keep interviewing. Like I said, I'm trying to find people that y'all haven't already talked to or that will respond to my Slack messages, because I'll hit up somebody, crickets, nothing. I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. I'm not cool. That's fine. You'll regret it. Whatever.
No, I think
we have to help you to get onto your show, because we know some of these people, you know, so we're gonna shame them.
Hit them up and just get the entry code. I want to do some more stuff with y'all too. This was really, really fun.
Good, you know, I think this is really fun, you know. And thanks to Will for being, you know, again, he's a brave guy, you know. Thanks, the mob Will. Cast. But I think we should be, we have a job as well to mix up some of the entertainment for people in the closure world as well. You know, we've got to try and do that a bit more and have a lot of fun. So it's been really great, Jordan. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for joining us and bringing the pretty lady as well onto the podcast.
Oh, where is she? Oh, she's sleeping. She's the best. I was like, oh, I'm a pretty lady? Oh, I mean, yes, my pretty lady.
That was almost awkward for a second there. You know?
Yeah, right. Oh, shit. Yeah. I got to keep it sane.
Keep it professional. Family exactly. Show feature.
Is Will the pretty lady? I thought Will's the pretty lady.
No, I put my pronouns at the beginning.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I asked.
Fair enough.
Working on it.
But I think, you know, we took over the bullshit, specialization, there is still cow dung, you know, like there are other flavors that people can pick up and, you know, entertain people a lot. I'd encourage you to talk to the folks. I think it is always a challenge. Like even I and Ray does that as well, trying to scout, quote unquote, scout for the people. Sometimes we need to encourage them because sometimes they're like, you know, yeah, maybe not, or there might be many reasons, right? As you said, when people are, there are humans behind it, and there might be many reasons that they can't make it.
Mm.
So I'm pretty sure in the closure community, it is much, much easier for, that's what I noticed because I'm also doing the Rust podcast. That's way harder to get anybody to get onto the podcast. Yeah. And also, I think it helps a little because since we've been running the show since the dinosaurs were there, you know, so we are like the...
Yeah, there's only so many people. That's the whole thing I was thinking about. Exactly. Is there's like so the only, there's only so many, like, you know, superstars.
Yeah, but come on, we're at number 74.
Exactly.
And, you know, so I think there are more than that. There's a bit more breadth and depth in the closure script world. Uh-huh. But I think, you know, I think from the podcast perspective, I think we can do a bit like the conferences do. We should be more friendly towards each other, and I think this has been really good. I think we can all help each other out and, you know, be part of this community too. You know, we don't have to like compete for people to come on the show. Everyone can go on different shows and there's different, you know, I think, you know, you've got a really great personality and a really great way to talk to people. So, you know, I think everyone's going to really enjoy your show and it's a different flavor than ours, like you say. And, you know, you're just a total star in my opinion. I'm going to be doing something different with you as well. So, you know,
we're going to have
another little project. We're not going to talk about it now. We just tease it a little bit.
All right. We'll tease it. So don't use the P word. You got to stop using the P word. I know what you mean by the P word now, but got to stop using it.
What is the P word? Oh, yeah. Okay. I see. Yeah. Okay.
Politics. Politics. I feel like it's more like philosophy of technology. Cheek poly, you get like, hey, can I ask you about politics? And everyone's like, no, God, no. Like,
yeah, no, but I was teasing it by saying we're going to talk about the P word. You know, it's like the P tape. You know, it's like we're going to, maybe that's what we should call it, the P tape, you know?
God damn it.
pick up some of the branding, you know?
Will, say goodbye to your job. You should just, honestly, I shouldn't even tell people that you're still here. You'd be like, I am not associated with whatever that
I left. I'm not doing that. 30 minutes ago.
Exactly.
This is that paid sponsorship end. You know, this is like, welcome to Quip Toothbrush. Brush your teeth with quips and stuff. Yay, VMware. Like.
Anywho. On that bombshell.
On that bombshell.
We're gonna start the dramatic piano. And then we say goodbye to each other now.
Oh.
Okay, bye. Okay,
no, that's not our theme. So thanks that's our again, show. Will. Thank you, Will. Thank you, Jordan.
All right.
Bye.
Yeah, thank you all.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of DefAnn. And the awesome vegetarian music or the track is Melon Hamburger by Pizzeri. And the show's audio is mixed by Wouter Dullert. I'm pretty sure I butchered his name. Maybe you should insert your own name here, Dullert.
Wouter?
If you'd like to support us, please do check out our Patreon page. And you can show your appreciation to all the hard work or the lack of hard work that we're doing. And you can also catch up with either Ray with me for some unexplainable reason. You want to interact with us, then do check us out on Slack, Clojurian Slack or Clojureverse, or on Zulip, or just at us at DefAnn Podcast on Twitter. Enjoy your day and see you in the next episode.